Good morning and welcome back to Our Savior's Radio Online. It's great to have you with us again today. I am Pastor Eric from Our Savior's Lutheran and again with Pastor Jennifer. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we are continuing our walk through Scripture. Last week when we got together, we were talking about King David. And today we're going to jump up and start in 1 Kings in the first chapter. And we are going to travel through the rest of David's life and into Solomon's life as well. So that's what we're going to be doing today. Do you want to start us off with?
Sure. So David's pretty old and has been in reign for a long time, close to 40 years. And it starts off by saying that he was very old, and although they covered him with clothes, he could not get warm. So a servant said to him, "Let a young virgin be sought for the Lord. Let her wait on the king and be his attendant. Let her lie in your bosom so that the king may be warm." And so that's exactly what happened. They found a young virgin named Abishag, the Shunammite, and she became his servant and, you know, literally lay on top of him to keep him warm. But it says that she did not become his wife. He did not know her sexually. He had many wives and probably many problems with the wives that he already did have.
So there's the new job description, to be the one who wants to lie on top of the king and keep him warm. There you go.
I hope it paid well. Anyway, that's only important for something that happens a little bit later on, but she became very dear to him, you know, kind of taking care of him and that sort of thing. So in the meantime, the king is pretty old and not obviously very functional as a king, and one of his sons, Adonijah, decides that he is going to become king in David's place. And instead of going to David and asking for his blessing and to be appointed as the, or anointed as the next king, he just kind of takes over. He recruits a bunch of David's advisors, including Joab, who we've heard of before, who killed people that he wasn't supposed to kill, and a couple of priests, and they all kind of treat Adonijah as the new king. And he sacrifices a whole bunch of things, which apparently was a sign that he was going to be reigning. Well, the prophet Nathan heard about all of this and was kind of horrified because David apparently had promised Bathsheba years before that Solomon, their son together, would be the king after him. And so Nathan, instead of going directly to David, goes to Bathsheba and says, "Look what's happening here. Your son is not being made king. Adonijah is acting as the king. So you need to go to your husband. You need to talk to him, and you need to tell him that he's got to anoint Solomon to be the king," which is kind of triangulation at its best. Why he didn't go directly to David, who he had been advising for years, we don't really know. But so he sends Bathsheba, and of course Bathsheba wants to look out for the best interest of her son.
And also for herself.
Well, that too. You know, being the mother of a king is about as good as being the wife of the king. And so she does. She goes to David and says, "Do you know what's happening? Just, you know, underneath your nose, your other son has taken over the kingdom, so you need to do something about this." And while she was still talking to him, then Nathan comes in and basically reaffirms what she has said, that Adonijah has taken over and that he needs to be stopped because Solomon is the one that's supposed to be the next king.
And so David then calls Bathsheba back forward and says, "All right, come in here," and says, "You know what? God has kept me safe, and today I made a promise to you that I remember. Solomon will be the next king." And so he brings up all of his advisors who are still with him, Zadok, Nathan, Benaiah, gets them together and says, "All right, I want you to take Solomon out and have him ride my mule. Have him ride it out to this place, Gihon Spring, and there you will make him the new king. Then after the ceremony, I want you to have a blow trumpet and have everybody shout out, 'Long live King Solomon. Bring him back here, and he will take my place as king. He is the one who I have chosen to rule over all of my lands.'" So they say, "We will do that." So they go out, and they have the bodyguards with them. They have these different leaders. Solomon rides on David's mule. They go out to this place. They take the oil from the sacred tent. They anoint Solomon. A trumpet's blown, and everyone shouts out, "Long live King Solomon." And so then they play flutes, they celebrate, they dance, they make so much noise that the ground is shaking. Well, Adonijah is in the middle of eating when he hears all of this noise. And they start to ask, what's going on? And then Jonathan, another Jonathan, came running up and says, I've got news for you. David has chosen Solomon to be king, not you. I mean, Solomon even rode David's own mule. He was anointed, and now he is being brought back to take David's place in the palace. At this point, I would start to think that Adonijah would get his people together and start a war so that he could be king. But that's not what happened. Instead, Adonijah is afraid of what could happen. And so he goes and runs to the altar and holds on to the altar in the sacred tent so that he could basically be there to claim sanctuary so he won't be killed. And so he goes there. Everybody goes and tells Solomon that Adonijah is afraid of you. He's holding on to the corners of the altar and he wants a promise that you won't kill him. And Solomon says, all right, if Adonijah doesn't cause any trouble, and there's the condition, if he doesn't cause any trouble, I won't hurt him. But if he does, I'm going to have him killed. So someone down to the altar told Adonijah, and Adonijah went and saw Solomon, and Solomon said, just go home. Just go home.
But he did say, as long as you prove to be a worthy man, you will stay alive. So in chapter 2, David gives some advice to Solomon, basically to remember why he's king. And he's king because God has made him king. God is the one that has given David the success over the years and has given them everything that they have. And so he needs to continue to be faithful to God and to lead the people in being faithful to God and keeping the laws of Moses.
But that's not all he does in this instruction to Solomon, because this is David's last talking with Solomon in an official way. And so he also basically in these last words puts out his hit list. And basically says, all right, here are the people that have harmed me, and I have told them that I wouldn't hurt them. But when I'm gone, take them out. There's even a line in there, whatever you do, don't let him die peacefully in his old age. I want you to take these people out as well. And so that's part of what David passes on to Solomon. And then after he was king for 40 years, ruling in both Hebron and Jerusalem, he finally died and was buried in Jerusalem. And that's when Solomon really did take over everything.
The second half of chapter 2 is a little bit strange. And if you would read it, probably you'd see how strange it felt to me when I read it this time as well. So Adonijah is not out of the picture yet. He understands and he accepts Solomon as the king. But he goes to Bathsheba and says, I just have one request. Can you go to the king and ask him, could you please let me have Abishag as my wife? And Abishag, as you remember, was the young woman who comforted and kept King David warm in his last years. And so Bathsheba kind of says, okay, that sounds okay. You'll let him stay king as long as he gives you this woman as your wife. Sure, I'll go and talk to him. And so she goes and talks to King Solomon, makes the request, and Solomon says, whatever you ask, I will grant it. I won't refuse you. And she says, let Abishag the Shunammite be given to your brother Adonijah as his wife. And King Solomon kind of blows up and shortly thereafter kills Adonijah, which seems like a huge overreaction. There must be something else going on here. And likely what it is there was some sort of belief that those who cared for the former king, concubines, that sort of thing, they belonged to the former king. And if you tried to marry them or take them, bring them over to your side, that you were trying to take over as king. And so whether or not Solomon was correct in being suspicious and paranoid, he believed that Adonijah, by asking for Abishag, was going to be taking over the kingdom as well.
And part of this probably had to do with Adonijah's history and how he had tried to claim himself as king before. And Solomon had gotten word that if he had been king, Solomon and Bathsheba might have been killed. And so it's tying that in as well. So whatever the history definitely is playing in on the decision that he makes here, which, like Pastor Jennifer was saying, really does seem like an overreaction at times.
So Joab, who had sided with Adonijah before Solomon was named king, hears that Adonijah has been killed And he is very paranoid about what's going to happen to him next. And so we're introduced or reintroduced to a man named Benaiah, who basically was the royal hitman. And he this is not going to be the last of the hits that he does. And so Solomon commands him to go and kill Joab. And so he finally does that for a number of reasons, including what David had said, the two people, Abner that we talked about last week and somebody else that were killed against David's wishes all the way back, like during Saul's reign. So this is kind of a long grudge that has lasted through David's whole reign.
But it doesn't stop there, because then comes Shimei. Because Shimei basically had said that Solomon, he had been associated with the others as well. And Solomon said, you know what, Shimei, you can still live, but you got to stick around here. I got to be able to keep my eyes on you. And so I want you to live here in Jerusalem. I want you to have a house there. But here's the thing. You can't leave. If you ever leave, you're going to be killed. And, you know, it's your own fault, because I'm telling you right now, don't leave. And Shimei said, all right, I can do that. I'll live here. And he stayed there and had a good life for about 3 years. And then two of his servants took off, and Shimei found out where they were. They were in Gath, so he went after them. He went and he got them and brought them back, and Solomon heard that he had left. And so he said, you know what? You disobeyed me. You broke the promise that you had made. And I now remember all the cruel things that you had done to my dad. And so you're going to be punished. So he turns again to Benaiah, the royal hitman, and says, go kill Shimei. And so he did. And at this point, he had basically taken out all of those who might have been able to challenge his authority and his rule. And so at this point, he had complete control of the kingdom and was then in charge of everything that was going on.
And having such peace in the kingdom afforded him a lot of luxuries to do things that kings would not have been able to do when they were invested in battles and that sort of thing. Chapter 3 is probably one that you've heard before. Solomon is known for a number of things, and one of them is his wisdom. Solomon was faithful to God and loved the Lord, it says, and sacrificed as he was supposed to, and God spoke to him one day and said, what can I give you? Because you are so faithful to me, I will give you anything that you want. And Solomon says that he is asking for wisdom. He doesn't ask for money or for beautiful wives or anything. He just asks God to give him wisdom so that he can rule over the people faithfully. And God is so impressed that Solomon has asked for something so practical and selfless that he says, I will certainly give you wisdom, but I'll give you much more than that. And then Solomon wakes up because God had spoken to him in a dream. And this is kind of the beginning of the wise Solomon. Later on in this chapter, there's the story of his wisdom, kind of one of the illustrations. There are two prostitutes, both of whom had babies like on the same day. One of them had a child that died. And so what happens is during the night, she goes and takes the live baby, and she lays it on her chest to act as if it's hers, and she gives it her dead baby to the other woman. And the woman knows that her child did not die and that the other woman had, you know, tried to fool her. And so they both go to the king asking for his wisdom and what should they do, because they're both claiming that the live baby is their own. And so Solomon listens to their case, and then he says, well, you both claim that this child is your own. The smart thing to do when two people have claimed to something is to split it in half. So somebody go get a sword, we'll cut the child in half, and you can both have half. Well, immediately the real mother says, no, 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 please just let her have him. Don't cut him in half, because obviously you cut a child in half, he's going to die. And so she says, no, you can give him to her, give him to her, don't hurt the child. And King Solomon knows from that moment that she is the mother of this child, because the other woman said, okay, sure, split him in half. And the real mother would be the one to say, no, I would rather give him away than have him be hurt. And so people hear of Solomon's wisdom, and it gets around that that he is fair and he is wise and that he is a great king over Israel.
The story of Solomon's wisdom continues to show throughout 1 Kings. 1 Kings 4 basically is a list of all of his officials, different people, and the size of his kingdom and so forth. A little bit more about his wisdom. But then things start to change a little bit because now Solomon has basically decided that it is time, and he has gotten this inspiration from God as well, it's time to build a temple. It's time to make a house for the Ark of the Covenant. And so he starts it out by getting in touch with King Hiram of Tyre. Now, this is one of the kings who had always been friends with David, and he had learned that Solomon was going to be king, so he sent some people to meet with Solomon, and Solomon sent a message back basically saying, you know what? My dad always wanted to build a temple, but there were always these battles going on, and he didn't have the freedom to do this. So now I want to, because there's peace. And God had basically promised that when I became king, that I could do this. And so what I'd like to do is get my cedar trees from you. You've got them up there in Lebanon, and I'll pay you whatever you want. I'll even have my workers help for them, whatever it is. I just want to be able to do this. Well, basically, Hiram and Solomon worked out a deal where he could get all of the lumber that he needed as well as other things and build this temple. And so the story goes on throughout 1 Kings 5 about the building of this temple. And so it finally gets to take place, and it takes about 7 years to build this entire temple. If you want to read through all of that, it's 1 Kings 5 and 6. You can also see everything that is furnished in there. It was quite ornate, especially for that time with everything that came together. Well, after the 7 years of building the temple, then Solomon said, all right, it's now time to build a palace here. And so for 13 years now, he went on and he built this palace. And part of it had a justice hall where his throne was. This is a place where people would come and he would judge the different cases that were going on. Again, if you read through 1 Kings 7, you can see all of the furnishings. Another Hiram is involved in all of this, in the making of it, because he was a bronze specialist. There's also a list of everything that was in the temple. We're not going to read through all of those. But it was the timing that basically to build the temple and also to build the palace. So about 20 years took place for all of that to take place.
So unemployment was fairly low during Solomon's reign. Talks about how they have lots of slaves who are conscripted into building a lot of these things. So the temple is dedicated. Solomon offers off all of the necessary sacrifices and probably way more than he needs to in order for the temple to be dedicated to God. If you know anything about what the temple was like, it wasn't like a church that you would go to now that, you know, anybody can go in and check out the pretty architecture and stuff. The temple was to be God's home on earth. And the Ark of the Covenant was located in the very center in what is called the Holy of Holies. And nobody was permitted to go in there except for like one priest, maybe a couple of times a year. And that priest would go in with fear and trepidation of being struck down and killed because it was a very fearful place.
He even would go in and have a rope that would be tied around his waist in case something happened to him and he was struck down and killed there, they could pull him out. So that's how much fear was going on with that.
Yep. So the temple is there for people to revere God. And, you know, there were parts of it that some people might be able to go in, but the Holy of Holies is reserved for the Ark of the Covenant with the commandments inside to be the home of God, the house of God, finally, after all of these years that people have wanted to build a temple for God. So God speaks to Solomon a number of times, and a couple of times it's kind of warnings. You know, Solomon lives in a good time. He lives a pretty good life. He's built a lot of things. He has all this wealth and many people in his life, but God knows that that can all go to somebody's head. And there's a few very interesting passages of warning. One is in chapter 9. I'm starting at verse 6. God says, if you turn aside from following me, you or your children, and do not keep my commandments and my statutes I have set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut Israel off from the land that I have given them, and the house that I have consecrated for my name I will cast out of my sight, and Israel will become a proverb and a taunt among all the peoples. And it goes on to say, basically, things are great now, but I know what people are like. I know how greedy people can be, and how when things are going well, they look at themselves as the success, and they see the things that they want, and they don't turn to me. They turn to one another and to idols. And so keep in mind that if you turn to anybody else other than me, everything you have here, this whole kingdom that you've built up, it will be lost, and even the land that I've given you will be taken away from you. The rest of 9 and 10 talk about things that Solomon did, building basically a fleet of ships and all of the things that he built, and his reputation. The Queen of Sheba came to basically check out and see if this guy was for real, to see all of his things. And it says that after she had observed his wisdom and the house and his food and his officials and his servants and everything, there was no more spirit left in her, basically saying that she was very humbled, because anything that she had was nothing compared to everything that God had given to Solomon, that he indeed had this great kingdom, and she couldn't compete with that.
One of the interesting things is, with all of the peace that came throughout the region, in some ways it was a peace that was bought by marriage. Because what would happen is Solomon would marry different relatives, daughters of different kings, so that they could have peace with one another. And at one point, if you look in 1 Kings 11, it starts to talk about the number of wives that Solomon had. And it talks about having 700 wives from daughters of kings, and marrying or even having concubines of 300 other different women. So we're talking about 1,000 of them that were around. I'm seeing the grimace on Chrissy's face over here. But a lot of this were marriages that were to promote peace throughout the area. But one of the things that happened with this is Solomon started to get influenced by some of the different women that he had married, especially influenced in worshiping other gods. David hadn't done that. David had remained faithful, and now Solomon is starting to be led to these different gods, especially one that is a goddess of Sidon and a god of Ammon. And so different gods, and Solomon even goes to a hill east of Jerusalem and worships some of these different gods that are going on, and builds shrines for some of these foreign wives so that they could go, or I'm sorry, some of these foreign gods, so that his wives could go and worship and give sacrifices to these different gods. This didn't sit well with God. And basically, the Lord comes to him once again and says, you know what? I told you all you had to do was remain faithful to me, and you haven't done it. So now I'm going to be taking your kingdom away from you, and I'm going to give it to one of your officials. But since your dad was as good a king as he was, you can be king as long as you live. But after that, it's going elsewhere. It's not going to be going to your family. And that was something that really affected, because this was the line that was supposed to be the one in charge and ruling for Israel forever and ever. And now we hear that that's not going to be happening.
So everything that David had done to unite the two sects, basically, the northern tribes and the southern tribes, all of that will be for naught. David was a great military general and won a lot of territory through battles. Solomon won a lot of territories through schmoozing and through marrying people, and that's going to come back to bite him, that he wouldn't see the tribes split again, but his son would. And so God says that the tribes would again be split into two, and that there would be someone not of his family that would rule over the majority of them, over the 10 tribes, but his son would still rule over one of the tribes, so that there would still be a descendant of David in Jerusalem. And we're briefly introduced to the man that's going to be taking over those 10 tribes, a man named Jeroboam, who kind of starts a rebellion, but we'll probably get into that more the next time, in terms of the splitting of the dividing of the kingdom. And at the very end of chapter 11, we hear that Solomon has died, and it lists very briefly the things that he's done, the Proverbs and the books that were written because of the songs that he wrote and everything, that he was a very prolific king in a lot of ways. But now he has died, and so the kingdom will never be quite the same again.
So now we've gone through the first three kings, Saul, David, and Solomon. The kingdom does split after this, but I think we talked about next week. We're going to take a little break from the history and the chronology, and we're going to go into some of the other aspects of these kings. We might be looking at the Psalms. We might be looking at the Song of Solomon, those different parts that these kings had brought forward as well, too. So we'll be looking at doing that next week. Anything that you would like to add at this point?
I don't think so. It's just one of the things that David and Solomon in particular were famous for, and so we'll talk about some of those little snippets of wisdom and music and things that they did during their reign.
And maybe we can even have you sing some of the Psalms for us.
Or not.
It was worth a shot. So thank you very much for joining us once again. We hope to have you back here again next week. If you have any questions, please send us an email. We'd love to hear from you. Have a blessed week.